Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for December 7th, 2012.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
Every nest had a different begging call note that was shared by the nestmates.
We found that an astonishing amount of genes come from completely different organisms, like bacteria, plants, other microorganisms.
So they're like little barbers that run out and just eat enough of it so that it doesn't touch the coral anymore.
This week, how reef corals signal fish for help, why some birds require secret passwords, and an animal that eats DNA. But first, I went to NASA headquarters for an important announcement about the surface of Mercury. Four scientists from the MESSENGER mission to planet Mercury have announced the discovery of water, ice, and organic volatile compounds on the hot, airless planet. MESSENGER is the first spacecraft to orbit Mercury, and it flies over the planet's polar regions every 8 hours. There, hidden in the shade of deep craters, the spacecraft has found areas of ice many kilometers and several meters deep. A dark-colored goo covers some parts of the ice, and the MESSENGER team is determined that that material is made of organic compounds, the chemical building blocks of life. Sean Solomon is MESSENGER's project leader and explained at the NASA briefing how Mercury gives scientists a peek into the early development of the solar system they couldn't get from any other planet.
If you delivered volatiles to the Earth, it would just be a drop in the ocean. If you delivered volatiles to Mars or Venus, the event would pretty soon be lost to all of the more dynamic geological and atmospheric processes that happen on those two bodies. But Mercury has these cold recorders of the arrival of volatile materials and gives us, therefore, a window into the time scale, into the spatial scale for delivery of water, delivery of organic material, delivery of other volatile materials to bodies for which that record is lost. And the fact that we see it on the planet closest to the sun is astounding enough. But the fact that it also informs our ability to work out the history of volatile delivery on Earth and Mars and Venus is very special.
One of the first indications of water came from MESSENGER's neutron spectrometer. Cosmic rays made of protons rain down on the planet and bounce off different elements. They bounce the most off of big atoms and less off smaller ones. Because hydrogen atoms are the smallest of all, in fact, the same mass as the cosmic rays themselves, the cosmic rays die when they hit them. So, to the neutron spectrometer, patches high in hydrogen appear dark. Cosmic rays go in, but they don't come out. David Lawrence is a mission scientist at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab.
It's basically billiard balls. And so think of billiard balls as being hydrogen and protons, and think of bowling balls as being all the other atoms. So let's say you have a room full of bowling balls, and you have a billiard ball in your hand, and you toss it in the room. Get out of the way, it'll knock you in the head. It's bouncing back very fast. But if you take the cue ball and hit it dead on with a billiard ball, it dies very quickly. It has very good momentum transfer because of the same mass.
Other data confirmed that those high hydrogen areas were in fact patches of ice. David Page, a MESSENGER mission scientist at UCLA, did thermal modeling of the planet that showed that the patches appeared only in places cold enough for water ice. He says the same thermal modeling helped figure out that the dark material that occurred with the ice was made of organic compounds.
Well, we know two things about this stuff. It's really dark, like about the same reflectance as coal, and also that it tends to disappear once you get it too hot, like about boiling point of water. And the only material in the solar system that we know that fits those two descriptions is this dark organic material that we find covering comets and also other icy bodies in the outer solar system.
The fact that both water and organic volatile materials are known to make up big portions of comets point to comets as the likely source of the material. They're also thought to be the original source of much of the water and most of the organic compounds on Earth and other worlds, too. Further study of these mercury deposits could help scientists understand the composition of these compounds and something about their chemistry. And that could provide unique clues into understanding the steps that led to life on Earth and the potential for life on other worlds. From NASA headquarters in Washington, D.C., I'm Bob Hirshon. Next, Correspondent Justin Warner tells us how reef corals call in cleaning crews when they need some tidying up done.
Coral reefs may just look like colorful rocks, but they're surprisingly complex colonial organisms. In fact, one common type of coral, called Acropora nasuta, can summon a cleaning crew when it needs it, according to Georgia Tech biologists Danielle Dixon and Mark Hay. The results were reported in the journal Science, also produced by AAAS. As Hay earlier told the Science podcast, there's a type of seaweed that's toxic to this coral. But the coral has a defense. As soon as the seaweed touches it, the coral releases a chemical that attracts goby fish, which bite it off.
And there were two species of gobies. They both went out and trimmed it back. So they're like little barbers that run out and just eat enough of it so that it doesn't touch the coral anymore. And when those gobies did this, one of them actually ate the alga. That goby makes a mucilage when it's attacked that is toxic to predators, and then mucilage became more toxic. The other goby didn't eat it. It would bite it off, but it didn't consume it, and it's not toxic. So one of them was actually using a toxin in its own defense, and the other one was simply protecting the home site.
The fish were even attracted to water that was taken from other coral reefs that had been touched by the seaweed. Yet direct contact with the seaweed alone didn't interest them. That suggests the gobies weren't just snacking opportunistically, but defending the coral where they make their home. Hay says it's the first known example of a species chemically calling in another species as a bodyguard.
Thanks, Justin. Next, Suzanne Bard reports on an Australian bird that makes its babies show their ID before getting fed.
Cuckoos are famous for laying their eggs in other birds' nests, pawning off all the care and feeding of their offspring to a hapless host parent. But superb fairy wrens have evolved a defense against the freeloaders. According to behavioral ecologist Sonia Kleindorfer of Flinders University in Australia, mother fairy wrens sing to their eggs while they're still in the nest, like this. After the babies hatch, they have to sing a special call note that matches key elements of that song in order to get fed. For instance...
But the really intriguing aspect was that every nest had a different begging call note that was shared by the nestmates. Whether you learn the password correctly will determine whether or not you live or die.
But baby cuckoos often don't get the password quite right and are often rejected by the host parents.
The cuckoo nestling, if you can imagine, will do something like, you know, me, 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 me. And if that last pitch and frequency elicits parental feeding, that's the note that the cuckoo will stick with. But if the cuckoo is, you know, too far off the mark, too dissimilar from the begging call of that nest, the parents will abandon that cuckoo. But if the cuckoo can find the right begging call frequency fast enough, then the cuckoo will deceive the parents into feeding it.
Kleindorfer adds that once hatched, baby cuckoos grow much faster than their nestmates and eat most of the food brought by the foster parents. So it's in the fairy wren's best interest to require a password before providing food.
Thanks, Suzanne. Sexual reproduction is thought to have evolved not just because it's fun, but because it increases the genetic diversity of the offspring, giving them a survival advantage. But what if you could just eat your way to a more diverse genetic code? Microscopic animals called deloid rotifers do just that. Cambridge molecular biologist Chiara Boschetti says about 10% of their active genes come from other species that they ingest.
So basically we found that an astonishing amount of genes come from completely different organisms, like bacteria, plants, other microorganisms.
Boschetti says all deloid rotifers are female and reproduce by parthenogenesis, without fertilization by a male. So all of these foreign genes have kept them genetically diverse for millions of years. She adds that rotifers are also extremely resistant to damaging radiation, and they can reanimate themselves after completely drying out. Once the dried-out rotifers are exposed to water again, they come back to life, patching themselves up with the help of borrowed genes. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, we'll have a whole new set of intriguing science stories for you. But if that's too long to wait for your next science fix, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And if you have a science question, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. That's 1-800-949-4748. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.